AmericanWorkers.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As I say each week, we serve the entire southeastern Pennsylvania area, New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio, and people from all over the USA can tune in by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. As you know, we also send out a rebroadcast, and rebroadcasts are available on the front page. And we ask that you send that rebroadcast out to a family member or friend, because that is how we continue to build up our family of supporters. You know, our 2019 theme has really been something that I wish a lot of our people in business, in politics, and also all of our supporters would take to heart: working together for the best interests of America and American workers. I'd like to spend some time today talking about a few things regarding education. Wow, what's going on in the education system is really unbelievable. Joining us today is Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store. And by the way, Mark has a brand new site up. I was told about that. And you can access that by going to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. And on the right side, you will see the Made in America store logo. Click on that and you'll go to Mark's new site. Also, right above that is an opportunity for you to join our e-list. Our e-list is sent out each week prior to the program, and also to the people after the program, so that they can share our broadcast, our panelists, with everybody else. And above that is the free download of Buy American Made app by Go4USA. I encourage you to click on that and go and see all that Mike Sessions has been doing in such a positive way to help us promote American made and American made businesses. Also joining us today is Larkin Conley, a national small business advocate, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and of course, Curtis Ellis, executive director for the American Jobs Alliance, very well known in the media. And by the way, Curtis, I do send out all of your emails to others, and I certainly enjoyed the emails that I received and the radio station that you were on. This is what it's all about. We got to keep the message going in a positive way. Curtis Ellis is also a representative of the American First Project. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I am Michael Blihash. Well, today is going to be the first day of spring. It begins a little later this afternoon, but boy, oh boy, it's another opportunity, another season of the year for all of us to go out of our way to start pushing the American-made label, shop at the stores where you know they are promoting American-made products, and also going out of your way to talk to the cashiers, the store managers, about presenting more American-made products in their stores. Last week, we had the pleasure to welcome Adam Andrzejewski, who is the founder and CEO of OpenTheBooks.com. I want to say I received a lot of great responses about Adam's efforts, and I'm pleased that a lot of people went on to the OpenTheBooks.com site and saw just how well done it was. It's really very well done. Adam Andrzejewski is another person that is doing his best to direct people's attention to how dollars are being spent, how much is spent for federal employee salaries and benefits, mainly without the taxpayers' knowledge. And that's, I'm very pleased about what the site has to offer. I looked at it several times, and I encourage you to go to it and see it for yourself. By the way, it is linked on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Just click on that link and it'll go right to the site. You click on the state that you are from and you'll be able to find out a lot of information about what is going on in your particular state and how Adam is making sure that you have that information. I do want to, everyone to know that OpenTheBooks.com is a government watchdog organization. It accepts no government funding. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, and it's a bipartisan organization that says things the way it is. All donations to the site are tax deductible, as it's a 501c3, and Adam Andrzejewski and his staff are not working for profit, but to pay the expenses needed to maintain the site. And when you go there, you will be very pleased with what you see. So check it out on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Today, I would like to share some ideas on solutions on skilled workers and the shortage that we are experiencing in America. Right now, as we speak, there are over 7 million jobs unfilled, mainly because there are not enough skilled workers right here in the United States of America. Having these young people go to junior high school, and college and come out with beautiful certificates is simply not doing the thing. It's one reason that we continue to promote trades and industrial arts in the America school system. But I think it's really more than just promoting. We have to get the parents, the grandparents, the people on the school boards, and everybody else directed to the same type of thinking that we are. A lot of these school boards are people that just, it's fine. We're kids are getting out with a half-decent education. That's all we need to know. Well, right now, as we begin spring, local school boards are discussing the present and future subjects that will be taught on September 2019 and 2020 and 2021. They are presenting their ideas to their city council members, to the legislature. This is your time to speak up. If you don't speak up, then we can't expect a lot of issues to be addressed. One more thing I want to say, and then I'm going to go to each panel member for their thinking as to what happened this week. There was a job fair in Philadelphia, and speaking with some of the presenters, I found that student debt has really had a very bad effect on our young people. Very, very bad effect. In fact, as you know, college students have been a captive market for years and years. It's been family and also peer pressure to attend a college and get a degree, or you're not, you know, that good of a person. It's now destroyed students and some of their families. Some students went into debt at the insistence, I should say, of parents. And when they were unable to get a job to handle the college scene and handle the college debt, wow. Really, battle started to happen. And this is a big problem that I'd like to see addressed by our state legislatures and our school boards. Now, it's a lot of things are happening in the colleges as well. You can see what the professors in the colleges are making, what the pensions are, simply by checking out openthebooks.com. Well, today I'm going to begin with some thoughts from Mr. Curtis Ellis. Curtis, how are you doing?
Just so happy to be here on the first day of spring. I've been taking notes on what you've been talking about, and I'd like to weigh in on those. But I'll start with, I have a piece up on the front page of Breitbart.com. I was on their show last night talking about the General Motors decision to shut down its Lordstown, Ohio plant, and the more general topic of tariffs on automobile imports. There's a story out today on Politico that says the report on the investigation into the national security impact of automobiles has been delivered to the Commerce Department. It's been under wraps, and someone got a peek at it, and it has no obstacles to the president imposing a 25% tariff on automobile imports because these imports pose a threat to our national security. I was talking about this last night, started with the General Motors shutdown and into the broader issue. So a lot of people laugh and they scoff when they say, well, how could imported automobiles affect our national security? We're importing BMWs and Mercedes, not Panzer divisions. The fact of the matter is that all of the advanced technology that and even the basic technology we need, castings, foundry, machining, precision tooling, that we need to make fighter jets and rockets and things like that, are supported by an automobile industry. Automotives, the mass market for automobiles, has the economy of scale to support the industrial technologies that are used in our defense industries. We are currently, someone was telling me, an informed source who's reliable and in the know, we are incapable of making more than two submarines at a time right now because we don't have the manufacturing base to do the castings, the molded parts, the molded metal parts that go into these submarines. We just don't have it anymore because we've outsourced so much of our industry. This is what the outsourcing of the automobile industry has done. People complain that, well, if you put a 25% tariff on automobiles, it's just going to wreak havoc on the economy and destroy the American auto industry, because you'll hear from General Motors and Ford, the big three, that, oh my gosh, this will just destroy our supply chains. We just don't know what to do about it. We'll be running around like chickens with our head cut off, or chickens with our supply chain cut off or something. And this is, to those people I say, take a look at the pickup truck. Maybe you have a pickup truck in your driveway. Maybe your neighbor does. Maybe you see one driving down the street. Every pickup truck in America is either made here or, and most of them have been made here. Why is that? There is currently a 25% tariff on imported pickup trucks. And that's longstanding. That's been there forever. Now, has this wreaked havoc on the automobile industry? No, it hasn't. Actually, it saved the automobile industry. Pickup trucks are the largest profit center for American automakers. It has forced companies like Toyota, which also sell pickup trucks in America, to make those pickup trucks in America. There are thousands, tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of people employed making pickup trucks in America, or making parts that go into the pickup trucks in America, or selling food to the people who make the parts that go into the pickup trucks made in America. Okay. So you could say the 25% import tariff on pickup trucks has been a boon to America and to the American auto industry, and you could make the case that this model could be replicated on any other number of products, other categories of vehicles, and perhaps other products as well, such as vacuum cleaners, for example, or anything else that you now see in the stores with a box marked made in China. It could be made in America, and it would have the same effect of putting Americans to work and at higher paying jobs and supporting the industrial supply chain, which our defense industries rely on as well. Now, why is General Motors closing a plant in Lordstown, Ohio? The fact of the matter is, General Motors has a business model and a business plan that's been in place for a long time. And their plan is to shut down their entire North American operation to make automobiles in China to export to the rest of the world. That's their plan. That's what they plan on doing. And they had a big celebration for the anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party. Cadillac sponsored this celebration with advertising and banners and flags and little red books and everything else. They want to sell Cadillacs to the Communist Party leaders. They want to sell Buicks. Right now, the Buick Envision, which is their SUV, is 100% made in China, and it's exported to America. General Motors has no intention of making cars in the United States of America. Its business plan is to entirely shut down here, make everything in China, and sell everywhere from there. And it's interesting that General Motors, after being bailed out by U.S. taxpayers, still owes the government $11 billion. Don't take my word for it. You can look on the website of ProPublica, ProPublica.org, I believe. They list all of the companies that have gotten subsidies and loans and whatnot that have paid back or not paid back. General Motors is right up there, $11 billion. Still owes the American taxpayers. And it's interesting that bailout was concocted by Wall Street people, not by manufacturing people, not by anybody with any know-how, any experience in manufacturing. It was made by people, finance flim-flam artists from Wall Street. One of them is named Steve Rattner. You may see him on Morning Joe. This guy was supposed to go to prison for taking kickbacks for investing the New York State Pension Fund. He would get kickbacks depending on, or pay kickbacks. I'm sure he took as well as gave. He managed hedge funds, and in managing the New York State Pension Fund, he would take money depending on where he steered the investments. He pled guilty. Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, wanted to put him in jail after long negotiations. He didn't serve time in jail. Instead, he writes for the New York Times, and he has a place of honor on Morning Joe on MSNBC. I think I would rather watch a prison yard than watch Morning Joe, but that's my own my own feeling on this. Anyway, Steve Rattner and his friend Will Daniels were in charge of the GM auto bailout. Harry Wilson was the other one, a Goldman Sachs executive. When they restructured GM, brought it into bankruptcy, and brought it out of bankruptcy, and had the U.S. government put billions of dollars into the project, they set it up so that when GM came out of bankruptcy, it was not required to buy American, hire American, continue doing business in America. Because these people, Steve Rattner and Mr. Wilson, are globalists, like the rest of the people on Wall Street. They don't understand the idea of sovereign nations. They have no loyalty to this country whatsoever. They only have loyalty to their bank books. And so not only did they not require GM to hire American, buy American, and make it in America, they knew that GM had a business plan to move overseas to China, and they thought that was fine. If it's more efficient to make things in China and more profitable to use virtual slave labor in China, subsidized by the Chinese Communist Party, great, do it. That was their feeling. But in addition to that, Harry Wilson also, in a little bit of self-dealing, made himself rich in the process. Because what they did is, they took some of the U.S. taxpayer money and took some of by canceling out some of the pension benefits and requirements to some of the salaried employees, to GM employees, the salaried employees. They left GM, when it came out of bankruptcy, with a huge hoard of cash, a lot of cash on its bank account. A year later, after that happened, and they said they justified this is going to make it a strong company. Having these huge cash reserves means GM's going to be strong. Not having factories, that would make it strong, you would think. Having a solid product line, that would make it strong. No, having these are Wall Street people, so having a huge cash reserve will make GM strong and make it a profitable, desirable company. Well, indeed it was. A year later, Harry Wilson, the same man who designed this structure for GM, then led a group of corporate raiders and to attack General Motors. Why? Because GM had this huge cash reserve that it really should be paying out to investors. And he had the Raiders install him on the board of General Motors with the promise that he would then take that cash and buy back the stock from investors. So in the process, he made himself a lot of money. So not to go on too long, but that's how the GM bailout was it messed over Americans. It was a payout to the Wall Street globalists and a sellout to the American workers and to the American taxpayers who bailed GM out in the first place.
You know, Curtis, I think that, first of all, I would like to see everybody in the House and Senate and the president go after GM to repay the money that the American government lent to them in the first place. Not worry about giving profits to investors. Pay the American people back, number one. And the 25% tariff, what is the tariff on a car made in America shipped over to China? What is the tariff?
25%. 25%.
Okay, so we want the same consideration. Tariffs work. You know, when they first started the tariffs, from what I understand, it was to help make the seaports better and, you know, the waterways if they had to dredge it or whatever. Today, it's not that way. I mean, we're already state of the arts in most places where the containers and all are received. So the tariff should go into part of the tariff should go into an unemployment fund or maybe an educational fund. As you're talking, I heard this so many times. People use the same excuse, Curtis and everybody else. They say, we're not going to have enough skilled workers, qualified workers to make the cars and all the other stuff that we need. But the Chinese and the other foreign countries have been focused strictly on being great presenters, great manufacturers. And why work here in America when you can just have it shipped from overseas and go on and sell it to your customer? A very bad move.
Well,
very bad move.
Very bad move. Because I'll answer that. Because if your customer doesn't have a job, he's not going to have the money to buy the car. I mean, it's very simple.
Exactly. And, you know, even like I was mentioning earlier, at the job fair, the young people are looking for jobs, I mean, where they can actually pay their own expenses, move out of their parents' house, and be able to pay their college debt.
Right.
The cost of college
is a huge drag on the economy.
Oh, it's killing. I think Rich Loges once told me that it's bigger than the mortgage market.
Well, right. And young people can't buy houses now because they're loaded down with debt.
Right.
And what we're seeing is, why are young people glomming towards socialism? Well, the same reason the landless peasants in the Third World went for socialism. These young people are serfs. They are in debt peonage. We need the equivalent of land reform. We need to give these people, young people, a shot, hope that they can make a living, earn their own way, and not just be paying off the bank for the rest of their life.
Right.
This was the idea of the FHA, beginning in the New Deal, but expanded greatly in the GI Bill after the war. Give low interest loans and have people own land. If people own something, and they're not going to become socialists if they own property.
Right.
And they own land. And this was what the Kuomintang did in Taiwan when they were driven out of mainland China by Chairman Mao. They came to Taiwan. First thing they did was land reform. Give the farmers their own land. That way they'd never become communists because they owned their own land and they could take care of themselves.
Exactly.
So we've got this huge debt overhang, which is turning them into socialists and giving them no money to live on, to start a family, to buy houses, which is, then has a ripple effect through the entire economy. The banks are getting wealthy, getting payments, getting paid back from these ridiculous loans, but the rest of the economy is suffering because you don't have money in circulation. The banks aren't then turning around and lending that money to any businesses or anything. And then on the last thing you talked about, which was worker training, I was talking with John Anker of this company Anker Pack down in Columbus, Georgia. And he's been involved in worker training, but an interesting angle. He's actually training unskilled workers, right?
Right.
He says, yes, skilled worker training, very important, but here's something else. What his company does is they do contract packaging. And the motto of his company is, imagine if you could have an American company do those jobs that you would normally outsource to another country. So they make bobby pins, they package the blister pack for batteries and little things like that. He's got machinery that it was made in 1939, and he's still operating it here instead of having it be shipped to China. And he makes a profit. And he's hiring people that are getting the less skilled jobs, but they're learning how to work, they're learning what work means, and his experience, and this is what he was telling me, which is very interesting, they then acquire more skills, and they move on, and they go to work for Pratt & Whitney, defense contractors, more high-tech, not more high-tech, just blatantly high-tech companies. They start out, and they start out with his company, and they move up and move out and move on. And so as we talk about worker training and skilled worker training, let's not forget about some of the less skilled worker training that's also required. So, and these are, again, kids that are not taking on a mountain of debt, but they're making a living, and then they can start families, own homes, and it's all good, and it's good for everyone.
You know, Curtis, before I go to Rich Loges and Larkin and Mark, I just want to say, as we're talking at the job fair and as we're talking today, I really think we should have a profession degree for the trades, industrial arts programs, and all these other specialty jobs that are needed in the USA. They dropped that many years ago, let's say 30 years ago, and I think you should be a professional degree, a certified profession, which you are able to then promote to the person looking to employ you. The profession degree would allow an employer to know that the person has additional training for the job, that he's really interested in doing what he's done. He has some hands-on working experience. I don't understand why this common sense type thinking, you know, died in America, and we allowed the people to just continue business as always. And now when I speak to some of the school principals and all, well, they said it's very common sense, but, you know, for us to open these classrooms again, we have no skilled teachers ready to go into the classrooms to make a new generation of American workers with those kinds of skills. I'm going to turn our microphone over to Rich Loges. How are you doing, Rich?
Hey, Michael. Good morning to everyone and to our listeners. Fellas, thanks for being on. Curtis, I've seen you everywhere recently, and I have to publicly thank Curtis for introducing me to an editor at the site that Tucker Carlson co-founded, The Daily Caller. We just got our second article, Curtis, published yesterday in The Daily Caller. I sent it to you guys last night about the 2020 census. So different issue from what we're talking about here, but Curtis, thank you so much for being so generous in introducing me, because I've seen you all over the place. Now I'm going to bug you on air going forward to get me hooked up at Breitbart, but that's a different issue, Curtis. So, Michael, look, I actually just talked about this, Michael. I did an article I sent you guys, Beto O'Rourke is a Democrat media industrial complex chia pet. Warnerum, nurture them, and voila, you get a Democrat icon who walks around with a hat shaped like vaginal labia. And in that article, what I said is that if you look at the brilliant scam that has been run for decades within not only public education, but higher education. And sometimes, Michael, you know, it's not our first inclination to praise our opposition, but I would have everyone watch that scene in Patton when they're in the tank battle. And Patton says, "Rommel, you magnificent bastard, I read your book." And he's talking about how he studied his opposition in and out to understand him. That's exactly what has happened with public education, Michael. We've taken, and higher ed, we've taken billions of dollars of public monies, taxes, and we flooded the higher ed market with that money. And so for all the Democratic Socialists listening, when you throw money at something, costs go up. It's called inflation. So then everybody says, wait a minute. If all these other colleges are going to increase their prices, so will I, because all this public money gets thrown in. So we use all these billions of dollars, Michael, to inflate costs of college. It's resulted in a trillion and a half dollars of college debt. And what do we have to show for it? We mass-produced tens of millions of useful idiot dope to walk around with Che Guevara T-shirts, idol-worshipping. And then, surprise, surprise, they say, oh, you know, Larkin, capitalism doesn't exactly work that well. Well, maybe we should try something else. So the pathway moving forward, Michael, education is a youth issue. It's a local community issue. It always has been. But at one time, I do trust, you know, Larkin, when your kids were in school and Michael, your kids were in school, it was about education and not indoctrination. Well, unfortunately, that has flipped. But just because it has flipped that way does not mean it cannot unflip. And we have to stop with this attacking young people as being stupid. I'm telling you, that's a cardinal sin that we make, Michael, because young people are not stupid. They're actually quite intelligent, but they're made into this way. It's like a clockwork orange. When they sew the guy's eye, remember Alex DeLarge, Malcolm McDowell, Curtis? They sew his eyelids open, and they put all the propaganda in front of him, the Ludovico technique. Michael, that's what's happened. But if our youth have been made that way, we can unmake them. But it's not going to happen on its own. There is no self-correcting in politics. Changes are made because people involve themselves to make those changes. Otherwise, nothing self-corrects.
You are absolutely right.
Yeah.
The biggest problem we have, Rich, is we allowed this as Americans to happen to our schools, to the administrative portion, where we're not pushing what is really needed in the job market of today and tomorrow. We stopped doing it. If Mark Andel needs a dozen welders, I mean, it's not that you put out a notice. The next thing you do, you have a problem. You can't find the quality people.
And let me say, okay, a lot of people find this surprising to learn about me because my first book coming out this year, 10 Warning Signs Your Child is Becoming a Democrat, it's very clearly what the book's about. And I always tell people, what's it really about? Well, it's just making sure your kids don't grow up to be Democrats, right? You know, we all get a laugh about that. But they're surprised to learn that I actually don't believe that kids are political pawns, right? I do not want – kids in school don't need to learn about how god-awful the president is. They don't need to be taken to feminist marches wearing hats of female anatomy. They don't need to sit down in the fifth or sixth grade with a man dressed up as a woman, Michael. What they need to do is have critical thinking, right? Have analytical skills, cause and effect, which will then allow them to make this with the guidance of parents, of course, which will then allow them to come to the conclusion of making decisions that are best for them and their lives and their families and their businesses. That's what I believe education at one time was. But then we had to mass produce all the tens of millions of useful idiots. So it's moved away from that. And I'm not saying all schools have. And I actually, Michael, don't believe that for the most part the teachers are trying to do a good job. You know, I do think that.
I believe the teachers are doing their very best.
They're trying.
But their hands are tied.
Exactly.
Everywhere I go, they say it's a it's great
bureaucracy, right?
And you know, they have more libraries and everything in the schools that are barely used, where they had those trade and sewing classes and everything else. They don't want to do it because the hierarchy allowed the teachers to do whatever they wanted, because the hierarchy just was waiting to pass time, get their pension, and move on. I want to, before I go to Mark, I'm going to mention this, and I know Larkin is going to like this. You know, as far as the political end of things that I've been watching for the last few weeks, it's the same negative news and the same negative ideas. From what I see, the candidates running for president right now are telling us how they're going to spend our money, but no one, none of them, is telling us how we can earn money. How can we earn the money to pay? How can we earn money, earn a living, get job skills, which will then help us to pay our bills and enjoy life and pay those taxes? No, they're all talking, every one of them, about how they're going to make sure government's involved in our lives. I don't
and
want
Michael,
government.
I'm sorry, Michael, I'm sorry, last point, Larkin, Mark, I'm sorry. So now that we've got $1.5 trillion of debt, and kids and parents are like, I don't know if I want to go into hock for $500,000 for the rest of my life. What's the new narrative with college in America? Make it free. Wow. Amazing,
well,
huh?
Well, make it free is one thing.
Coincidentally happened.
Make it free, I believe, make it reasonable. Not that you're putting in time and tenure to just get a pension and do nothing in the process, but to be recognized for what you've done that is good, to educate. I mean, a lot of the students should have been speaking up a long time ago when they graduated with those beautiful certificates and debt and no place to go at the end of the season. And there were years that we announced that up to 40% of the students graduating had absolutely no job offers. That's really strange. But I will say this, their bill for the college debt is coming in. And by the way, how many presidential candidates, Mark, have you heard tell you how people can earn a living to pay the taxes and honor their ideas? How many of them told us so far how they're going to reduce the taxes? How many of them said what they're going to do to make education better and cost less? Nothing. It's the same rigmarole. It's the over the edge. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. Who are they influencing? A person who has a job, a person who has a business, nobody is going to want to hear that stuff. So they're looking for people who are looking for like the Cinderella syndrome to come out, and all of a sudden I'm going to have everything if I vote for this person. Some of these people, I can't believe they're even putting their name in to run for office without a written platform that's behind them. And by the way, if they had to put that in writing, I think a lot of their ideas would be squashed before they open their mouth. Mark, how are you doing?
Good, good. How are you guys doing?
How's that new site doing?
Excellent. MadeInAmericaStory.com. I want to be the best on the planet Earth, and then we'll work on the other planets, Mike. But Sue probably got a hold of you, right? Yeah. You know. Welcome, listeners, and Mike and Curtis and Rich and Larkin and Henry. Makes us sound good. Curtis, I want to go back to your GM talking about government motors. You don't mind me calling it government motors.
That's what it is.
I was a speaker, keynote speaker for the UAW in Dubuque, Iowa, back a few years now. Denny Williams was the president. I went there. I was a little nervous. My father was UAW, Ford Motor Company, his life, and Local 6. He worked two jobs to get us out of the city. I hear about that every day, Curtis. But, you know, when I flew there, I was nervous because I wasn't union, and they circled me, all the tough guys. And Denny Williams took me to dinner. He was the president at the point. I sat in a mafia-like dinner, it felt. But, you know, he talked about GM had just moved to India. The major problem was to get the employees to wear boots on their feet because the cow was a sacred animal, and they seriously couldn't get them to wear a leather boot. And they were taken over to ports, they're closing of Australia and things like that. But met Denny Williams, and I was a speaker before Denny. They played my little DVD I use, and then I did my speech on Made in America, the store. But I got applauded and hugged. And, you know, but Government Motors, they were talking about Obama was president at the point, and how, you know, everybody was pretty pissed in the audience, and Denny kept telling them, don't look in your rearview mirror. You know, we're going to get this out. But like you said, Denny, you know, any company, you got to be efficient. You got to have good profit margins. And General Motors was going down. You know, their stocks were closed off, and I had bought Ford at $2 at one point. You know, it went up to 16 per share. But they, you know, Denny was trying to sell them on stuff. But the company wasn't ran good to begin with. And then you just throw cash at it, like you said. Cash flow is the oxygen of a company. But if the company's not ran good, it's going down anyways, no matter what you give it. So I totally agree that General Motors should have never been, you know, our taxpayer money should have never been given to General Motors. I always respected Ford more because the headquarters was here, and I just believed in them more as a company keeping it here. I also met the, you know, president of Caterpillar and sat with him in San Antonio, Texas, and Mike, they played the movie, and I walked out of the background. You know, Caterpillar, they were more into the continent of consumption, so they wanted to stay. They included Mexico and Canada in the continent of consumption instead of shipping, and logistically it made sense to try to keep. I think Caterpillar was in 46 countries at the time. So they believed in sticking to one country, or, you know, just for logistics-wise. So there's a lot to be said. I agree with the 25% tariff, and like you said, with trucks, you hit it dead on. It's been there for, I don't know, Curtis, 30 years or better?
Something like that, 30,
you know,
40 years.
And that's been there. That's why pickup's too good. My father's on the board, you know, with Ford, and that's what kept them sales. Otherwise, they'd be gone. I'll never drive a Ford. You know, I drive a Ford. But, you know, so there's a lot to be said with that, and I believe in if China, like you said, Mike, they're charging us 25%.
Yeah, there should be across the board. You charge us, we charge you.
Yeah.
No biggie. What you do with your 25%, that's wonderful. What we do with ours is okay, too.
And consumers have the most power, as we always say. They have to make a conscientious choice in what they buy here and realize they want the money to stay here that helps their neighbor have these jobs, these middle-class jobs. Like I said, my father, we had an extra car and a swimming pool. We did okay blue-collar. You know, I push that. That's the start of my speech all the time. My parents grew up poor, and we did okay. And that blue-collar, that middle-class America went down. But, Mike, you started the show with asking a question on skilled trades. You know, you said, let's focus on that. I've got to tell you, in 10 years, I've been heavily involved, the last five even heavier, and the last two even more. Not only the American-made movie, but our Olean School District, I was just speaker at, Holland Schools, I was on the panel board with Moog and Astronics, Iroquois, I'm on the business advisory now, and it's growing. We're meeting weekly, and we just got a call from PTEC, the president of PTEC. And what you're talking about before, you want a dedication or a
certified profession degree.
But it's CTE, too, is career tech education. Everything I talk about falls under it. CTE, we want that under diplomas, under Regents diplomas. So career tech education is a real neat thing. I'm going to get a person on to talk about that, Mike. But I've seen more movement in the last month than ever. Moog, having heavy discussions with Moog, they make the servo valves and everything else. Moog has so much work, they cannot find workers, so skilled trades is first and foremost. And then Astronics, that make all the lighting for the instrument panels on most, you know, Boeings and whatnot that's based out of East Aurora here, they also cannot find the skilled trades. So we've been sitting on these panel boards, but these schools, the one I'm on, Iroquois, which is where I went and my children went, public school, they had to go to the superintendent, Doug Schofield, and then the board of education, and they got us 1 hour in front of 200 teachers, May 10th, to tell our spiel. We get 1 hour. I'll be with Moog. I'll be with Astronics. And, Mike, we're going to light them up with a little bit of movie trailer and things like that. We get 1 hour to try to sell these teachers and educators and make them aware in what we're doing. We're going to do cool things, how Made in America is real cool, how Moog is pretty neat. Why would you join Moog? Why would you join my company, General Welding? I just met with the president of the Northrop Grumman. Our joint threat emitter system, which is going to be called the JEDI system now, is the number one defense training system in the world. Kingdom of Saudi Arabia just spent $75 million to buy our system. I guess they're our allied friend, but they have cash, so Northrop Grumman likes them a lot. So it's pretty neat, Mike, what's going on. I just want to say hats off to our whole team, the listeners that support us, because the skilled trade shortage is being made aware, and there is change happening because the large companies are getting to the parents, parents, and parents and making them realize it's okay to work with your hands again.
Absolutely. You know, Mark, let me just add this before I go to Larkin. You know, at the job fair, this is the very discouraging thing. At the end of the fair, the people say, Well, we got some good leads, few leads, but we didn't get many leads where people have some kind of certification in the types of jobs that we need. And that's what's killed America for many, many years. We took away the things that we need. They kept saying, no, everything is going to go to automation and all. Not everything can be automated. Additionally, with the new products being invented every day, there is no reason that they cannot be made 100% in America and sold in America and then sold overseas. There's no reason for it. When you see some new gift or whatever that you get, you look and you say, why was this was invented in America? Why is it made
but Mike
now in China?
Earlier, the Wall Street guys and gals are not loyal. They're loyal to their dollar.
But it's we have to make our people loyal to us. You know, Mark, I had some political visitors here about 2 weeks ago, and the toaster that you sent me is sitting on this studio, you know, the studio room, it's yep. sitting here on the table, and they looked at it. One person said, is that a grater? I said, no, it's not a grater, a potato grater type thing. I said, no, it's a toaster. It is the only toaster made in America. Every other toaster is made everywhere else, but not in America, unless you're getting some commercial
Mike,
toaster.
I got to fill Curtis in on that story, so I promised these guys by the end of that year that I would make a toaster. Somehow I'd get them a toaster made in America. We've been to the moon, but we can't build a toaster, was my theory. And, well, the end of the year came, so I made them the old camping-style toaster that goes on top of your open flame. That's like a little pyramid, and I made it out of stainless, and I sent each one of them a toaster. I think some have burned down their house, maybe trying it, but it's pretty.
But what we, you know, Mark, when we got that toaster,
it was a toaster.
We got that toaster, we went in, Henry and all of us went in the kitchen, we put it on the stove, and we put bread. It was interesting. And
if
then we looked.
If you're running out of money, you cash that in, that's stainless 304. Get you a few beers for Larkin, at least.
Oh, my God. Larkin, how are you doing?
Good morning, Michael. Good morning, everybody, listeners, panelists, Henry. It's a great day in Florida, that's for sure.
And spring is here, so we're hoping for the best.
The day before yesterday, it was colder here than it was in New York City. I don't know. The weather's kind of weird anymore. I wanted to add something to the conversation here about Ford Motor Company, the bailout, Government Motors, and all of the rest of that. It is my contention that the government's involvement in all of this rigmarole ultimately becomes the backbone or the feeding source to congressional members who can make under-the-table investments and become very, very rich people with insider knowledge. You know, this country back in like 11 or 12 passed the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act. It was better known as the Stock Act. And then a couple years later, like in 13, 5 years ago, Congress gutted the primary disclosure component to that Stock Act, and while still making it difficult to make trades on inside information, this means that all the congressional members now don't have to publicly disclose the trades and the potential inside knowledge that they have. So, you know, you applaud the Stock Act that they passed. But then it's hard to keep Congress honest, and we all know we really shouldn't have to do that because they're the most honest group in the world. It's hard to keep them honest if it's difficult to get the information of their inside trading. So as I continue to harp on the fact that our politicians and our lawmakers don't look at all like us, don't act like us, don't function like us, don't have the restrictions that we have. This is one of those underlying things that allows someone to walk into the halls of Congress as a newly elected member and instantly be fed information that that allows a level of insider trading that would make millionaires out of all of us if we so choose. So, and I'll go back to your lack of training for workers. You know, I stand very heavily on the premise that people need to be trained as a process of giving them a hand up and not a handout. Congress is just dead set, and I'm going to have to just say this. I try to stay non-political, but the Democrats just want to give away the farm. I mean, I can't. I'm looking in one direction, any direction, to find something that the Democrats don't want to give away, thinking that they have all the money in the world to do this. But
just not their farm, Larkin. Just not their farm.
It's not their farm. Exactly right. They've got their millions. They've got their, 239 days off every year, and they've got their health care subsidies that they receive, free airport parking, and a base salary that's almost unbelievable at $175,000 a year. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But all that being said, let's give them a hand up and not a hand out. And let's recognize that the solution to this problem is grassroots, period, amen. I don't care what federal law you pass. I don't care what state law you pass. If you do not get the parents of these children involved in the process, it will never be corrected, ever. You'll just be, as we say in Pittsburgh, peeing into the wind, and you're going to get a lot of it in your face. You have to get along in the grassroots of this and become members of the Board of Education, attend the meetings, regularly attend meetings with guidance counselors on your own children. They have parent-teachers meetings in a school that one of my grandchildren go to, and they have 30 parents show up.
You know, everybody, I want to add something to that. You know, I spoke with a teacher who speaks, who's at the Bucks County Community College. And the conversation was wonderful. And they said this, which was really interesting. They said, Michael, I want to tell you that when the students get into the schools, they do the classes that they're assigned to, or if they don't want to be assigned to that class, then they go to the regular reading, writing, and arithmetic. Right now, we have no slots available in our trade schools, which means that we need to open more trade schools. The students are not against it. The students are there for those 7 hours a day, and they will take the subjects that are presented to them. And once they begin taking those subjects, from what I understand from this teacher, they really feel good about themselves, and they feel that they're accomplishing something. Right now, running from classroom to classroom every 45 minutes, I mean, seeing your friends passing in the aisle and all, that's great. But what is the bottom line when they leave? Yeah. America needs those skilled workers to keep manufacturing, research and development, all the stuff here in the new world economy in America.
And Mike, I think they should be called skilled trade schools again. They come up with all these other names, like BOCES up in our area, and it makes it, the kids get a stigma and whatnot. It's a skilled trade school.
Yes, and they should be given a certified degree that they have gone through 2 years, 3 years, 4 years of this particular profession. Just like a lawyer. The lawyer goes to school, they take the bar, an accountant goes to school. There should be a school where this is the certified profession degree, and let's move on with this. When I hear that there are 7 million job openings, mainly because we don't have enough skilled people, how is it even possible in America with a population of 326 million people? It doesn't make sense. That means the schools are not doing what they're supposed to do to put people out ready to work and for the industries that are needing
it. You can't grow this economy without answering this problem, because when I'm sitting with Moog and Astronix and my General Welding, we cannot grow without workers. So, you know, there's a big stalemate then.
There's also something very, very discouraging. is a teacher told me that over the summer they are going to bring in a number of Indian teachers to teach young people how to do certain things with the computers and the technologies. How can that possibly be? Why can't we have our own teachers ready, able, and willing to go and teach those subjects?
You know, it's like welding, Mike. How many welding instructors and teachers world will be if the average age of a welder is 65 to 70 now?
And this is another big problem. There's nobody out there right now to replace many of the people that will be retiring. So we have to beat this drum very loud. When I talked about the certified profession degree, everybody said, oh, degree, that makes it sound much, much better. Not just a certificate or you're getting a degree. You have a degree in whatever you're going for, human services degree. You're going for heating and air conditioning. You have a degree in that. Whether you're going into business yourself or you're going to be hired by somebody, they know in the file that you are certified. You're not going to be wasting time. You know you have a basic knowledge. You have a better than basic knowledge of what they need to run that business. Ladies and gentlemen, oh man, I'm telling you, this was a great show. It was very good. Curtis, thank you so much for all of your input. Larkin, as always, you are the best. Rich, click on Rich's picture on the front page of American Workers Radio, and it will go to the Rich Loges Show. Mark Andel, thank you for all that you do to make sure that people know about the Made in America store and the Made in America movement. And you can also listen to Mark's show on the radio simply by clicking on the Made in America radio show right under the logo. I'm always happy to sit back and listen what you have available when I get those YouTubes or I got the radio station link. Thank you for doing that, because this is the small voices like ours are starting to make a major difference. Also, I encourage you to visit openthebooks.com. Go to your state and look at some of those people in the various levels of government and industry, in the private sector industry that's there, what they're getting paid and what the people in government are being paid, and you'll be a little bit shocked what you see. Well, ladies and gentlemen, until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11 here on 860, I want to wish all of you a great first day of spring. My very best. May God bless all of you, and may God bless America. Thanks for being part of our broadcast today.
All right. Have a great week, guys.